Blog Talk Radio.
LifeQuest Christian Network.
Okay, we are live right now on the show, and I want to apologize to those of you that have been trying to connect. We had a little problem with the system. Sometimes these glitches occur, and I think that we have a couple of our guests on right now, and we're waiting for Sissy to call back in. This is Alexandra Clare, and we're with Reflecting His Gifts. And George, are you online with us right now?
Sure.
Okay, this is George Kirkendall with Citizens for Community Values. And George, while we're waiting for Sissy, would you give me just a little bit of an introduction to the wonderful work that you do? I've always been grateful to be somewhat aware of your work and just in awe of what you do. So go ahead and just give us a short little capsule of what you do.
We at CCV we got somebody else on. But anyway.
Sissy's on. And Sissy, I just asked George to give us a capsule view of what he does. And I'm going to step back and let you take over.
Okay. I'm going to start out with an introduction to their work first. And then, George, we'll get into your program. Welcome, people. We've had a little bit of technical difficulty tonight, and we've got that all straightened out. So we're going on as usual. But welcome to Reflecting His Gifts. Our program tonight deals with one of the fastest growing areas of crime and bondage on earth today, the sex for trade industry. One of the fastest growing money making industries in the United States, and in fact, all over the world, is the sex trade industry. Sex is sold in nearly every city in our country over the internet, in the strip clubs and brothels, massage parlors, and many other places. What used to be hidden and taboo as far as sexual perversion and sexual activity is all out there. Anything goes. You can literally buy any kind of sex with any kind of person for a price. People don't even have to leave their homes to buy sex. There are thousands of sites and lists on the internet offering sex. Pornography addiction has reached epidemic proportions as men and women become habitually engaged in internet sex. Unguarded internet access has become the means for many innocent children who should still be playing with toy cars and dolls to be introduced to sexual perversion and filth via the internet. Sex sells, but unfortunately it takes a toll on human beings as it ravages their minds, their character, their health, and their finances. Sexual immorality is one of Satan's favorite weapons as it accomplishes his desire to cause broken homes and marriages, as it ravages minds and souls, as it devours human beings regardless of age, from the youngest to the oldest. No one is immune to the possible destruction of this growing epidemic of sexual immorality and depravity. My guests this evening have made it their life's work to do all they can to offer hope and help to women who want to leave that industry. George Kirkendall is the Executive Director of Citizens for Community Values, and Carol Wiley is the Director of A Way Out, which is their rehabilitation program for women who want to leave the sex for trade industry. George and Carol are frequent speakers in our city and true advocates for women who are being abused, used every day in the sex for trade industry. Citizens for Community Values has been directly involved and highly successful in their ongoing fight to change laws regarding the adult entertainment industry in Memphis. It's my pleasure to welcome George Kirkendall and Carol Wiley to Reflecting His Gifts. Hi, George and Carol.
Hello.
Hi, Sissy.
So nice to have you on our show tonight. First of all, tonight I would like for my listeners to become acquainted with George and Carol. They both had other careers and other lives before becoming advocates for women desiring to leave the sex for trade industry. George, let's begin with you. Who is George Kirkendall? And what did you do before you began your ministry with CCV?
Well, first of all, I'm just a guy, okay?
But yeah.
I grew up in Memphis, and I remember the great days that were here when we were prettiest, quietest city in the United States for several years running. Went to Central High School, graduated, went to Memphis State, University of Memphis. Joined the Navy, became a pilot, stayed 26 years and did a lot of search and rescue. I was a helicopter pilot. I have three daughters, all three married, and a wife and a Siamese cat. And it's a female, and I didn't have much of a chance around my house. But anyway, I learned to watch out and how to take care of my daughters, and they fought through the life in a way that I'm really proud of all three of them. How did I get involved in this? I was sitting on the bench at Collierville when two gentlemen walked in, and it was a planning commission meeting, and they came in and basically told the city of Collierville that they were going to open a gentleman's club there no matter what they thought, and they could not stop it. And besides, it was a job just like working at a bank or at FedEx. I mean, they were just really pushing it down people's throats. And it was in Christmas of 98, and everybody in the city was really upset about what was going on, but nobody wanted to do anything about it. I called a fellow in Memphis who is part of the Citizens for Community Values at that time. I had never heard of it, and I asked him if we could fight this, and he said, yes, here's two phone numbers, call them. The second phone call was to a department in Washington, D.C. I told him the situation. And they said, well, we can fix that, and we can fix it right now. And I said, how's that? And they said, we will send you a set of ordinances that will control the topless clubs and the adult bookstores in your city. And it's been upheld in court to the point where it can just be read three times in Collierville Planning Commission, and it will become law. Well, as soon as it became law, the people were no longer interested in coming in Collierville. And so we were able to, that was the first fire I was able to put out with.
That's a wonderful fire to have put out. It really was. And it takes somebody standing up. You know, a lot of Christians say things aren't right, but there are very few who will actually stand in the fire like you have done. So Citizens for Community Values, did it start with that move that you made to try to defeat that club, or was it already in place, or was that organization already in place when you did that?
Well, the Citizens for Community Values was really brand new, and it was formulating what their policy was, and that's the people that gave me the phone numbers, and we got pretty close in what they were doing and what we were trying to do, and it just kind of ballooned from there. We are taking on a lot of different roles and helping other people. But the next thing I ran into when I decided to take the job that they offered me as director here, the libraries were not filtered for pornography or nudity or anything like that. And it was a city and county library at that point in time. And two county officials that would vote on this, on the budget for the libraries just to open up the 25% that the city and county paid for, the libraries wouldn't stop, and we couldn't stop them from doing it until two of these officials were able to hold the money back from the city library. And as it turned out, Memphis was the first library in the country that was filtered against nudity and obscenity, and was also the biggest, and it paved the way for a law that was passed in passed through the Supreme Court that allowed any library to filter against the internet.
That's a wonderful thing, because can you imagine kids being able to access all that stuff in the libraries, or anybody being able to? That would have been a terrible thing, and I really applaud you for your part in that as well. George, what do you think led you to your passion for helping these used and abused women? Do you think it was having your own daughters? And there aren't many people who, I mean, sometimes we feel sorry for people and we don't like the way things are, but you took it to a whole nother level. What do you think? Do you think you've been assigned by God to do this? And do you think having your own daughters led you to care what happened to these women?
Well, God is really, really in the middle of it. And you know, we think about what's going on in these clubs, these internets and so forth. A pastor in Memphis not long, well, he's been dead for a few years, talked about pornography, and he said, this is his definition, it's pornography was made in hell by Satan himself for the sole purpose of ruining the family, and the family is the cornerstone of Christianity. And that says about all of it right there, as far as I'm concerned. It's worth fighting for. And having three daughters didn't hurt at all.
Right.
I mean, I'm overprotective, if anything, on that. So.
Well, they're very fortunate and blessed to have had you for a daddy, I know. Carol Wiley is the director of A Way Out program. Carol, would you tell us about your life and what you did before you worked with A Way Out? And how did you know this was your God-given purpose?
Well, I was a wife, a pastor's wife, and just a mom, and busy about that, and active in my church, and had a real heart for helping, just hurting women, even back then. And so I did a lot of training in biblical counseling as far as helping women. And went back to college with my boys and graduated with them, and got my BS in counseling with my major. And then from there, I did an internship with a friend that was a counselor with sexually abused women.
Mm-hmm.
And they just absolutely won my heart. But the thing that really made me realize that this, that CCV was the place that God wanted me, was I was working on staff at Central Church and doing some counseling there. And then I was working with another friend that was a counselor, and we were doing sexual abuse groups and all like that. And I had begun to pray about a couple of options, and George had been on staff about a year, and they had decided that they needed someone with a counseling background to come in and write a structured program. And so George approached me, and I started to pray about it, and I started arguing with myself, giving myself a million and one reasons every time I would interview with them as to why I should not do this. And so I had been praying the prayer of Jabez, and one night, just in the middle of the night, the Lord just woke me up out of a dead sleep, and it was just as if it was an audible voice, although it was not, because I had gone to bed that night kind of arguing why, and saying, Lord, I can't do this because.
Yeah.
And just as clear as a bell, he just spoke to my spirit, and he said, you asked me to expand your territory, did you not? And so the Lord, when I said, yes, Lord, I did. And so if that's where you want me, and if they want me to come, I'll go. And that's how I came to staff, because they did offer me the job. And I've never doubted for one moment that this wasn't the place that God had called me to.
It's very evident that you and George both have been called to that. The love that you have, the compassion that you have, and the discernment, the wisdom, just the drive that you have to keep doing this. I would say you're very definitely called to that.
Well, it's just a special thing. And another key thing that the Lord did in this was Carolyn McKenzie, who founded CCB, had asked me to start counseling the women. And that's how I met the first few. And the first one that she brought to me, couldn't even look up.
That's and, what I was going to ask you. How did you deal with the first client who ever came to you for help? And tell
well,
us about that experience.
This little girl couldn't even look up, and she was so broken she could hardly talk, and I started just sharing with her, and I looked down, and she had scars in her hand. And I took her hands, and I said, "Honey, what happened?" And she said, she began to tell me that she had worked with this club owner, and he would send them out with different clients. And if they didn't go, he had a bowl on his desk that he kept that was full of punishments, and the women would have to draw a punishment. And so one night, this guy she didn't want to go with because he had been abusive to her before, she said no, and she had to draw a punishment. And her punishment that night was that he took a nail gun and he shot her in her hand.
Oh.
And when she said that, I just started crying. And it still makes me tear up. I'll never get over that. And I just said, "Honey, do you know who has nail scars in his hands? Mm-hmm. And that he loves you so much. He loves you and died for you." Mm-hmm. And it just broke my heart. But yet, I say it broke my heart, but it won my heart, because they won my heart at that point.
Of course.
So they're just precious women. It's easy to do.
Well, did you have a place for them to live at that time? How did you help them? I mean,
no,
did
we didn't at them? That time.
What did you do with them after they came to you like that?
At that point in time, what we did is we just, with what budget we had, and we'd have to go out and try to raise more money to just help them provide their needs and help them with rent or whatever they needed so they could work the program. You know, at that time, it was not as structured as it is now. It was basically a Bible study, and we would provide counseling for them. Now, though, we do have housing for them, and it's not all we need, but we have a really nice home that's a 3-bedroom, 3-bath home, and we can house 6 women there. And
that's
it's
wonderful.
Real cozy and homey, but we don't have room for children. And and we call our home the Agape Home because it was given to us, and then we had been given some money, and we were able to renovate it. And the couple that gave it to us asked that we call it the Agape House. And so we want it to be that kind of home for them where they experience the agape love of God.
Well, absolutely. And I would think you could use a house 3 times that big, right, with all of the women who need that kind of help.
Most definitely. And our dream is to have one where we can house the children with them.
Yes. What do they do with their children when they come? Do you help them to find a place? Well, just tell us about the Way Out program. What is offered to the ladies who come in order to help them to turn their lives around? Tell us all
when
this and the ways that you help them.
Okay. What we offer is we have what we call growth groups, which is a Bible study every week. We have, and now we've added so many classes. We have an intensive outreach addiction and life skill classes, which last 16 weeks. And we do classes like boundaries, 12 steps of spiritual journey, forgiveness, heart of addiction, relapse prevention, surviving childhood sexual abuse, relapse prevention. I said that. Dealing with sexual addiction, and then healing the mother wound, anger management, parenting, and dealing with depression. And then we have processing groups along with that. And then we provide counseling for them still. And after they've been with us a couple of months, we assign a mentor to them who stays with that woman throughout the program till she graduates. We have we have job readiness training now. We help them get their GEDs or their HISET. We give them educational assistance if they want to have further training. We have a work project called Broken Pieces, Mended Lives, where the women make crosses, and those crosses are sold, and they get a small stipend when their cross sells, and then some of the money goes to help with their needs. But we named it that because these crosses are made out of broken dishes, and not a one of them are alike, and we just the Lord just kind of gave us that name because we've looked at, well, these women come to us so broken, and their lives are mended through the cross. So we named that Broken Pieces, Mended Lives. We have
what a
special event. And so just and then we just meet each woman right where they're at, Sissy, and try to develop a plan that helps her accomplish some things that she needs to do to, you know, some of them have, are able to accomplish higher goals than others. And so we just have to kind of look at all that and not set their goals too low or too high, but just come alongside them and help them develop a plan so they can become independent and good moms again.
How do you minister to the children of those ladies? I know that their involvement in the sex trade industry is not just affecting them, but has far-reaching effects and damage into their families and their children. Do you minister to the children as well? Do you have family groups? How do you minister to the families of these women?
We do. When the children are where in town, some of the children, like the women we have right now, most of their children are with family members out of town. But when they're in town with a family member or whatever, we help them with school supplies, school clothes, shoes. If need be, we help them with counseling on an as needed basis. We just try to do whatever we can, you know, to help the children, because a lot of them are hurt, they're angry, they're, a lot of them have been through abuse themselves, and just even vicarious traumatization as they've watched their mom get beaten up, or, you know, so we do, we try to work with them as best we can, you know, on an as-needed basis.
Well, George and Carol, I believe with all my heart that at the root of many of your clients' problems, as well as anyone who's engaging in prostitution or habitual sexual immorality, there's often a story of their own trauma and sexual abuse as children. Would you agree and share your thoughts with our listeners on this?
Most definitely. Most of the women, we probably helped in varying degrees close to 500 women today, and about 95 to 97% of them were sexually abused as children themselves. And so needless to say, this just sets them on an early path of surviving, not living. And so it's real easy for them to just jump right out of the frying pan into the fire. And they're just very vulnerable to people who seem to have a radar for vulnerable children.
Well, I've always said it's kind of like a moth drawn to a flame. People, children that have been brought up sexually abused or in an abusive or violent environment seem to gravitate toward the very thing that hurt them, because I think it's what they're familiar with. That's where they've developed very horrible coping skills, and they don't fit in often in a normal world where everybody is kind or godly. So oftentimes they gravitate toward that terrible environment because it's all they know, don't you think?
Oh, it is. It's definitely.
Sissy, when I first came here, I really had a hard time understanding the women and their behavior a little bit. And I went to an expert and sat down and talked with him, and he gave me an example of what these women are like. It filled in every thought I had. But when a child is sexually molested, at that moment, their mental growth and their maturity stop. And it may, you know, it just, like a bridge, it just falls down. and you can't go any further. And then when we're able to get them and get them in the help they had, then the instead of them, what they do is they start at the beginning and start building to where that bridge fell down. And it's not like somebody's just had an emotional trauma. They hit a hard spot, but they live on through it. And you just got to get them help to let them be able to grow past where they are. And it's amazing to watch them.
Yes,
to see the emotional state that they're in, and they don't realize that it's nothing for me to be sitting across this from a 35-year-old woman that's making decisions like an 8 to 12-year-old because of that stunted emotional growth. And they don't even realize that.
Right.
You're
exactly right. Well, George and Carol, we're going to pause for just a few moments to hear a word from our sponsor about the exciting Woods End series from author Alexandra Clare. Stay tuned. Hang on, George and Carol, and we'll be right back.
The Woods End series by Alexandra Clare. When Andrea is framed for murder, she discovers that divorce cannot sever the ties from a dangerous cult. Follow Boston Police Detective Jared Scheel as he sets out to solve a murder and kidnapping, only to confront a vast conspiracy competing to produce the last Antichrist of world history. Against the backdrop of drama and intrigue, the Woods End characters come to see that demons are on their last assignments. Bible prophecy unfolds in real time, and Jesus Christ is at the door. Two books, Woods End and the thrilling sequel, The Year Between the Wood. Download from Kindle, Nook, Screwpulp.com, or purchase the softcover at Amazon. Also by Alexandra Clare, a work of nonfiction, discerning spirits, visionary gifts in practice. Find it all at alexandraclare.com.
LifeQuest Christian Network.
Welcome back to our show. We're talking tonight with George Kirkendall, the Executive Director of Citizens for Community Values, and Carol Wiley, who is the Director of A Way Out, which is a program that offers rehabilitation and refuge to women who want to leave the sex for trade industry. And we were talking about how most of these women have, if not all of them, have a story of sexual abuse at the beginning of their lives in their early childhood, which sets them on this path to become victims in this industry. George and Carol, how important is it to get to the root of those problems, to help the clients vent and air their pain in order to help them to understand why they do what they do and to move on away from that behavior?
Sissy, it's absolutely vital that they do that. When painful emotions are buried, they're really buried alive, and it's they're subtly calling the shots in every decision, in every life decision that that woman makes, without her even knowing it. And so it's the most important thing that they can do is get to a point where they can begin to look into those dark places and into those hard places and let the light of the Lord shine in there so they can begin to move into the light. We talk a lot about also about wanting them to move out of the darkness into His marvelous light. And it takes that process of being willing to go through, just to kind of walk through that pain as you have someone to kind of hold your hand and allow the Lord to walk through it with you.
Exactly. I've always called those kinds of trauma trapped trauma, because often those little children had no one to tell. They weren't allowed to cry out their pain, and they kept it inside. And I've always believed that trapped trauma, unless it's released, will govern that person's behavior for the rest of their lives. And so
I know
in my own life as an addict for 25 years and a victim of some trauma myself, that it all had to come out in a safe place with a safe person and with Christ there with us. And once it was out, and once I could
express that, then that opened the door for Jesus to be able to inhabit those dark places, just as you said. Mm-hmm. I'm sure prayer is a huge part of that process where you minister to these ladies, but and tell us about that. But what other ways do you gain their trust and make them feel comfortable enough to share their pain with you?
Well, prayer is the most important ministry, I think, that we do, not just with them, but for them. We pray for them even after they leave, because some do leave and don't make it to graduation. They'll stop early because they'll run from that pain. But what we try to do, Sissy, is just meet them right where they are with no judgment and just one of the promises I make to them, I tell every one of them that the promise that I'm making to you is that you're going to be treated with dignity because you were created in the image of God, and because of that you have a dignity that no one has the right to touch. And that's what we try to do. We meet them where they are. We don't judge them. We treat them with dignity, and we earn the right to help them carry their pain and share their pain and to carry it to the Lord. But even more than that, they get to a place where the shame dissipates, and like you were sharing about yourself, then they can share their story. And there's great healing in that, too.
Yes, there is. And as you find your identity in Christ, you know, oftentimes the father figure in those women's lives brought great shame and pain to them, and that's where they found their identity. They walk around, like you said, with their heads down and can't even raise their eyes. And as they find their identity in Jesus and they realize how much he loves them, that he gave his life for them, and how much people who represent Jesus love them, those chins start lifting up, don't they? And you begin to see eyes that can look into your eyes and hearts that can share with you. And I think that would be one of the most wonderful feelings on earth that you experience as you see that in these women.
Oh, it is. And then I think one of the hardest things, and as I train my mentors, I have to continually encourage them that it isn't over till it's over, because some of the women do get scared, or for whatever reason they leave prematurely, and we do continue to pray for them. And what I mean by that, it isn't over till it's over, because when they're here, the love of the Lord and the Word of God is shared with them, and so they've got tools in their toolbox that they didn't have when they came. And we can trust the Holy Spirit of God to continue to woo them and draw them or do whatever he needs to do. And we have had some come back for the second time and then just be stars in the program, for lack of a better way to put it.
Right,
so,
right.
It's not us anyway that's changing them. You know, it's the Lord. And so we don't give up on them even when they leave.
No seed that you plant for Jesus ever returns to him void. It'll stay in there and it'll produce fruit some way, somehow. I'd like to hear some of the success stories you've been able to witness in your work with these women. Can you share two or three stories about women that are very memorable to you and what happened in their lives?
Well, one that, George may want to share this because he knows a lot about this one too, but we have one young woman that actually when she came to us, she was looking at 15 years in jail with drug charges. And she came in and, from day one, she just never looked back. I mean, she just had great, you know, never had a bad screen, just did everything we needed her to do. And I'm going to let George tell you a little bit about her without sharing her name.
All right, George.
Yeah, excuse me. We had a young lady because I'm a little older than she was, but she was 54 years old and had been on the street probably since she was about 6 or 7 years old. And she lived down in Midtown on the back of somewhere where you wouldn't really want to go at any point in time. And she had a neighbor that moved in and the next door to her. So he started coming over or bringing her over and showing her pornography on a computer. And, you know, and she wasn't real interested in all that. But then he started showing her child pornography. And he asked her, since she lived here, would she go find him a brother and sister that he could have sex with and then kill?
She was not really, I don't want to say dumb.
She did exactly the right thing. She went to the FBI and she agreed to be the wire carrier to bring this guy into jail. And lo and behold, she set it up. They went all the way down to Greenwood, Mississippi. They walked in the restaurant down there, and the FBI came on him like, you know, just like you'd see on television, put him on the ground and so forth. And he had a briefcase with him full of pornography. And, she really, really did a brave thing. And then she came with us. And she tried to change. But unfortunately, she just is back at her old tricks, as well as I know, probably 60 years old, still out on the street.
But I know you still pray for her.
Actually, George, there's another part of that story that I guess somehow or other we failed to let him in on, but we did get a word from her, this particular woman. It's probably been 2 years ago, but she had gone somehow or other to Texas and was in a program out there and was doing well again. But he's right. She relapsed and went back to the street, but then about a couple of years ago, we did hear from her. So that's another one of those that isn't over till it's over. But she was
right.
She was miraculous.
Exactly.
And George
and
worked close with her.
Sometimes I think it's so hard for them. They are walking in a world that is totally unfamiliar to them, and it's very hard for some of those people to adjust to that. And sometimes I think they just give up and say it was easier out there just to be abused and used. At least I know how to do that. So it takes a lot of courage and bravery for a woman to continue to walk the walk and continue on. If you can share another story or two, I would love to hear those if you have a couple.
We had one young woman, the one that was facing 15 years on drugs, just to kind of make her long story short, she was with us for about 5 years. She wanted to be a nurse, but she went through drug court in Mississippi, like to never talk her into doing it. She was going to take, she's just going to take a charge, but if she'd gotten through drug court, then she wouldn't have a felony on her record. So finally we convinced her to do that. She was just afraid that she couldn't make it. Made it through that, made it through the program, which is, I mean, hard. It wasn't easy for her, but she was committed to it. And long story short, after 5 years, she went back to college, and we helped her with that. She went through, she graduated with honors, actually got her GED first and made so high on her GED that she got scholarships to go to college, and we helped her with that. She graduated from the University of Memphis Nursing School with honors.
How wonderful.
And 2 weeks later, she married a preacher.
And
then about three or four days before her wedding, she found out that she'd passed her boards, and she's now working in one of the hospitals here in Memphis. And she's also working on her master's.
That is awesome. Yeah. That's why you do what you do. Because you would help them anyway, even if they went back to the streets like that other lady. But doesn't it make your heart just glow to see what your work has done, what the Lord has done in those lives? Her life is completely different now.
It is, and she actually held Thanksgiving dinner. She and her husband had the women and all and the mentors out to her home for Thanksgiving this past year. So that was a first for us for, to have one of the women do that.
That is absolutely and, wonderful. And that's the reason people should support programs like yours, that because you don't know. You might have 10 women, and out of those, two will become like this lady you just described. But that's so worth seeing and so worth witnessing and so worth helping someone to be that. And the others, you've planted seed in their hearts, and they will think about that, you know, on, and probably turn their lives around too at some point. But those
and,
are
you
wonderful
know, one,
stories.
Yeah, one thing, Sissy, is success, you know, for some of them isn't defined as a college degree. Success
exactly.
For some of them is just being off the drugs, having a good job, you know, that maybe even a kind of an entry-level job, but where they can get a small apartment and be on their own and not be on the street.
That is
so,
a huge victory. They don't have to be a superstar to have succeeded in your program. They can just be upstanding citizens with a peaceful life and without all that bondage. You know, I want to talk a little bit about pornography addiction. It's a huge problem all over our world, and anyone at any time, 24 hours a day, can access pornography, from the youngest child to the oldest adult. And many people don't understand the far-reaching damage that pornography causes the mind, soul, and body. I know that whatever we see with the eye is processed by our minds and then can integrate into our behavior, but many believe, however, that they are immune to the effects of looking at pornography. The Bible tells us that sexual sin affects the body like no other sin, and I believe that. Could you educate our listeners tonight on the extent of the pornography addiction in our world today and the damage that it is causing?
Well, let me start by saying that the average age for a boy to see hardcore pornography is 5 years old.
Oh,
and
George.
For women or young girls, it's 11 years old. And it's, you know, their sinks falling down more than anything, quicker than anything I know of, even drugs. Next would be there's a million kids that goes missing every year that never show back up. And that's because they're running from a sexual environment, including pornography, most of the, not all million of them, but a great number of them. And they last 5 days before they're in the hands of somebody that's using them. So that's the average, 5 days after they left their house. Let's see, what was the other one I was going to talk about? Oh, in our churches today, that the number is 60% of all the men that are sitting in the sanctuary have gone to XXX of some kind, videos, pictures, or whatever. But 60% of the men in there have purposely gone to pornography that day, and the thing that really kind of says it all for me is when, and I've had several of these, a phone call in here and says, my son's been using pornography. What do I do? And my first question is, where did he get it? And most of the time, it's his daddy's stash. He found it. So there's a woman, a mother, and her whole life right then and there is just changed forever for the worse. Now she can get back, but that's a feeling she'll never lose the rest of her life. She's been rejected, and her child has been molested mentally. So, it's growing, but there's another problem out there right now that has more people looking at it, and that's sex trafficking. People kind of shift from one to the other. Harry, and sex trafficking is Memphis is number 4 in the state of Tennessee for arrest of people, sex traffickers. That's just kind of what it is in this area, and it has affected everybody.
Yes, it has.
We even had a Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's pornography is a dressed-up, airbrushed, and seductive way to sell sex, and true life doesn't look like those pictures. It's sad because when men or women began to digest pornography, they often become dissatisfied with their marriage partners, and they begin to seek the delusional and airbrushed sex partners they see on the Internet or in magazines. Wouldn't you agree that pornography portrays an unrealistic picture of sex, where you can have anything you want with a beautiful and seductive partner, and it often produces divorces and broken homes?
For many reasons. And if the guy's hooked on pornography, he's going to try to practice that with his wife at home and see how it works. That's the first sign, I think, that a problem in a family, and it splits it up in a hurry. It really does.
Right. Well, what about the women who are in the sex for trade industry? Whether it's to do pornographic photo shoots or to prostitute themselves, what is the emotional condition of these women after a while, and what toll does it take on their lives?
Well, first of all, they it's hard to tell whether they're having sex for drugs or drugs for having sex, because they're intertwined in such a way that you need more, bigger, better. And both the whatever drugs you're taking and also whatever pornography that you're looking at on TV. But it ruins an image of a Christian marriage, a Christian activity, and it's you're right, it's an epidemic. And people are working on it. They'll be working on it for here until Jesus comes. But, it's in the community.
Yeah. Well, it's like you say,
those women are emotionally bankrupt. After those women, they're just emotionally bankrupt and have no self-esteem, and they end up with a very skewed view of life and of God after having that kind of relationship or having been in the sex for sale industry.
Well, it's like George said, it goes hand in hand with drug and alcohol use, mm-hmm. because most of those women have to have drugs and alcohol just to do those things that, they wouldn't do them if they didn't have those crutches. And as far as I know and have heard, the pimps always have a good supply of the drugs to give these women to get them to do what they do. But then that compounds the problem, because now they have addictions that
when they start doing the sex for the drugs,
exactly. Well, Citizens for Community Values has long been involved in the war against the adult entertainment industry as far as the laws that govern those establishments. George, I know you have valiantly battled in this area. Would you tell us about your battle in this, how laws have changed, and to support your stand, and what laws need to be changed to further support your stand?
The first thing is that there are no topless clubs in the city of Memphis or Shelby County at this time. That's not a well-known fact, but in 2012, the ordinance that the city had presented to Sixth Circuit Court six different times, and it was upheld every time, made the adult businesses no longer serve alcohol. And as soon as the alcohol is gone, the club owners can't make any money. So they changed their business permit, to be like a Hooters or like a Coyote Ugly, just a dance place. And that was probably one of the biggest victories we've had around here. But don't get me confused with somebody that did all of this, because the police department, OCU, judges, FBI. I mean, it's just full of people that are working to get that stopped.
I know, but you've been involved in it, and I know you have. So I'm not saying you're single-handedly, but I sure do applaud you for your involvement in it and your commitment to it.
Well, I'm proud of Memphis for doing what they said they would do, and they're monitoring those clubs to make absolutely perfectly sure that they're abiding by the law.
Well, that is a step in the right direction. George and Carol, how would a woman contact you who needs a way out? There might be somebody listening tonight who is involved in the sex trade industry and feels trapped. How could somebody contact you? to
they can,
find a way out.
They can call us at Citizens for Community Values, 452-7884. That's 901-452-7884. If they want to know more about the program, they can go to our website, which is www.ccvmemphis.org, and they can see what CCV is involved in, and they can click on A Way Out and learn more about the program that way.
Well, I know you have needs in your ministry, and what are the needs of your ministry? I know some listening tonight may have really been moved to want to begin supporting your work and helping you somehow. What does CCV and A Way Out need from those who would like to support your work?
We need volunteers who would volunteer to mentor a woman or provide transportation, provide meals. We have a prayer committee. We need people who would be willing to provide entry-level jobs and give our women a chance. We need group Bible study leaders, people to help with child care, people to help in our with our IOP classes, life skill classes, in our job readiness classes, help with special events. We have a Christmas Angel project that people can give to and help. We need handyman services from time to time. And as always, Citizens for Kenya Values we need people who would come alongside us financially and be willing to donate and help us financially so we can continue the fight in the city and so we can continue to help women, more and more women and their children.
Absolutely, and I can't think of a better thing to do for the Lord than to help women who want out of that industry. How can our listeners contact you if they would like to become part of this very important and vital ministry to these precious women? Do they call that number as well in the same website? Will you mention that again?
Yes, they can call us at 901-452-7884, or they can go to our website, which is www.ccvmemphis.org, and they can check out CCV there, and then they can click on A Way Out and find out more about the program and what the needs are.
Well, I encourage our listeners tonight to pray about that and to go to the website and to learn more about the community Citizens for Community Values and A Way Out program. There are some videos there. I looked at the website myself and listened to a video from one of your women who had been helped by your program, and it never fails to make me cry and to be thankful to God for you and for Jesus who set them free, sets us all free, and offers us hope. And I know we've all been enlightened tonight. We read and hear about the sex for trade industry more and more, but we seldom read and hear of those tirelessly work to offer these women a way out. We don't often hear of those who are courageous and willing enough to try to change the laws concerning adult entertainment establishments so that our communities will not be so adversely affected by those establishments. Heard from two wonderful, godly, and courageous people who don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk, and every day they try to make a difference in our city and in the lives of these precious women. Please pray about becoming a part of this very important ministry through your financial support and through your direct involvement with their ministry and your prayers. Be sure and keep George and Carol and their ministry in your prayers as well, because they are on the front lines for Christ. We've come to the close of another wonderful program with wonderful guests. Thank you, George and Carol, for joining us tonight. And thank you, listeners, for joining us tonight. Be sure and join us again next Thursday evening for another program with an inspiring guest who reflects God's gift. Till then, may God keep you in his care. Good night, George and Carol.
Good night.
And good night, listeners.
Good night.
Thank you.
The Woods End Series by Alexander Clare. When Andrea is framed for murder, she discovers that divorce cannot sever the ties from a dangerous cult.
Follow Boston Police Detective Jared Shield as he sets out to solve a murder and kidnapping, only to confront a vast conspiracy competing to produce the last Antichrist of world history. Against the backdrop of drama and intrigue, the Woods End characters come to see that demons are on their last assignments. Bible prophecy unfolds in real time, and Jesus Christ is at the door. Two books, Woods End, and the thrilling sequel, The Year Between the Wood. Download from Kindle, Nook, Screwpulp.com, or purchase the softcover at Amazon. Also by Alexander Clare, a work of nonfiction, discerning spirits, visionary gifts, and practice. Find it all at alexanderclare.com.
LifeQuest Christian Network.